Welcome to the Premier Academy 360 podcast, brought to you by VSP Global. We will bring you regular topical insights and advice from your peers and subject matter experts. Here's your host, Jim Castor, Vice President of VSP Provider Solutions.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of the Premier Academy 360 podcast. I'm your host, Jim Castor. You know, I think we can all agree that we're living in an unprecedented time right now. I want you to know that the team here at VSP Global and Premier Academy 360 are working hard to bring you information that we hope will help you navigate in these uncertain times. We've developed this podcast based on feedback we've received from many of you. The goal is to get you information whenever and wherever it's convenient, from your office to your home, really anywhere life takes you. And podcasts are a great way to do just that. In this episode, as well as others to come, we'll be sitting down with subject matter experts and your peers to bring you helpful insights, tools, and resources that are relevant right now in addressing the challenges of COVID-19.
So with me today are two very special guests, Stephanie Oh, who joins us from H&L Partners. They're a full-service creative advertising agency. Stephanie is the chief behavior strategist at H&L Partners. That's a fancy way of saying she really, really understands the consumer and works with companies across the country to develop a unique brand by leveraging tools that identify what consumers want and how they're likely to behave. She's worked with some of the world's largest advertising agencies, including DDB, Publicis Mullen, and the Richards Groups, and has consulted with some of the world's largest healthcare organizations. Also pleased to have Dr. Marianne Murphy here for the podcast. She's the VSP Global Board Vice Chair, but she's also the owner of a multidisciplinary OD and MD practice near Boulder, Colorado. She's been practicing for 18 years, and she's also an active member of the Colorado Optometric Association and the AOA. So today will be part one of a two-part series where we'll talk about how emerging trends in consumers' behaviors, both known and unknown from COVID-19, will affect doctors in the network in the coming months as practices are starting to talk about reopening now and resuming to what I think everybody is talking about, what will be a new normal and how to take advantage of that and this time available now so you can prepare for the future. So I want to go forward, start first with Stephanie. Stephanie, I'd like to ask you to share a few of your thoughts about, from a consumer perspective, how has this pandemic affected you personally?
Well, just like everyone, I would imagine, I am consuming a lot more of some things and a lot less of some things. And that's been a lot of talk among consumers, is what is considered essential, what's non-essential. They're amazed at what they're able to live without. But I've also had a big life change, like so many of us. I am practicing what's called quarantining, where instead of quarantining by myself, you grab your team and you quarantine together. So my family and I were in San Francisco, and we happened to have a farm in the Ozarks. So my adult children, me and my adult brother, who lives alone, decided rather than everyone living in isolation, we would all live together at the farm. So that's what we're doing right now. We are quarantining.
Interesting. Yeah, lots of different ways people are behaving in this current climate. Could never have predicted this 6 weeks ago, for sure. Talk for a couple of minutes from your perspective. I know you've had a lot of conversations with companies, agencies, and have reviewed a ton of research. How do you think consumer behavior is going to change as the nation starts to reopen for business?
One of the prominent drivers that indicates consumer behavior is consumer confidence. And a lot of times you hear about this with reference to their confidence in the economy, their confidence in being able to spend money. We have a different kind of consumer confidence that we're now talking about, and that is the confidence in being around others, the fear of others. And so when we talk about consumerism, most consumerism has been happening out in the world, out in a physical restaurant, out in a physical store, out in a physical practice. And as we see this fear of others, even fear of our friends, fear of our loved ones, not knowing who could have this disease and pass it on to us unintentionally, but, you know, those who cater to consumers are really looking at, how am I going to help alleviate their fear? And what they're realizing is that trust is now a value vindicator in their brand and in their business. Not, you know, it used to just be trust in my product, trust that it's going to work. We're talking about a whole nother level of trust that I can actually be in your space and be okay. So what we're doing is we're seeing consumers really latching on to the experts, those who have the facts or who have had firsthand experience with the disease. Everyone from Dr. Fauci, who is now a rock star, and no one had ever heard of him 6 weeks ago. Now he's a household name, to victims of the disease who are talking about what it was like to recuperate. Any kind of expert is now a rock star. So it's an opportunity for brands and practices to really stand out as a rock star and exude this new form of trust that's going to add value to their brand.
Yeah, that's great feedback. And of course, I would suspect that doctors would be considered experts and rock stars, right?
They would. However, we see 40% of adults saying that they're looking to avoid a doctor's office. 80 million people in America have reported, as we project out these quantitative studies, that they do not want to be in a hospital, a health center, or a doctor's office right now. Does that extend to optometry? We don't know. We can speculate. But right now, the white coat, while seen as being on the front lines and being a hero in their own right, they are seen as dangerous and something to be avoided at all costs, right? We know hospitals are sitting empty. People are having strokes and heart attacks and don't want to call the ambulance to go to the hospital. So this place, this mecca of trust has been, this is like a paradox. Like it's kind of been turned on its head. And so how do we make people feel like they can trust us in the way that they would be comfortable to come to us for those less essential, you know, if they're not coming for heart attack and stroke, you know, when are they going to come back for some of the less essential things?
Interesting points. Dr. Murphy, you're hearing all of this. How are you seeing this play out in your practice?
Yeah, it's definitely a reality. You know, I don't think as doctors that we ever thought we'd be in a place where people didn't want to come see us, you know, aside from the everyday fear of the puff test or getting drops, to be put in a position of questionable trust, I think is a tough place to be in. But we're seeing it every day. While my office has been open just for emergencies and urgent care, you know, it'll be someone who calls in the morning and says, yeah, I think I should be seen. We arrange to see them in the afternoon. And sure enough, they'll call back an hour later and say, you know, I talked to my husband and he really doesn't think it's a good idea for me to go out. So I think I should sit on this red eye for a couple more days before I see a doctor. So a whole new arena for us to be in.
Right. So typically consumers often will act, or consumers who are patients, of course, they tend to act in different ways depending on different kinds of segmentation, like age, gender, ethnicity, or other types of segmentation. Stephanie, are you seeing any difference in what you believe consumers in different kinds of segments are likely to behave as society reopens? And if so, how?
Absolutely. What we're doing is we're taking the segments that are most important to our clients' business. So for, you can imagine, for automotive or for travel, in this case for eye care, maybe you look at the segments in your business. Maybe you have young professionals, maybe you have moms, maybe you have people over the age of 55. And you break down what their drivers were previous to this COVID experience. So what were they coming in for? What did they care about? And is that going to change? And so what we're seeing, for example, let's take young professionals, right? Fashion was important. They're really concerned about their lenses, their frames, or wearing contact lenses instead of glasses. Now, what we're seeing, while all these meetings are taking place on Zoom, they're showing up to work in their bathrobes and they don't care if people see them with their hair not done. Is that going to continue? Is that going to affect the emphasis they place on fashion and what they're willing to spend on fashion? Are we going to keep having meetings from home where, yeah, you're seeing my dirty laundry in the background. You think you care about what frames you see me in? So, you know, so we're looking at the young professionals and how they're reprioritizing. We have this new language, essential and non-essential. And now that we've had this new language, this new code, everything gets divided up by essential and non-essential. For moms, what is the essential mindset? What is she going to consider is a need and what is a nice to have? What is she willing to risk, right? In her mind, every choice to go out, even after shelter at home. You know, we don't have a vaccine or a cure yet. So every choice is a risk, right? And how does she balance the risk? And then for those over 55, are they prepared to shift into the digital landscape? They are every day advancing at rates we've never seen before, but are they ready yet with telemedicine? Are they ready to be seen in the way they're going to need to be seen and doing the things that they're going to need to do? Are they even going to be allowed to? You know, while the rest of us are relaxed from the shelter at home and called to go back to work, are they going to be encouraged to do that as well? So those are some of the things that we're keeping our eye on in terms of demographic differences across the landscape.
I thought it was really interesting. One of the things that kind of stuck with me in your answer was, for many, it's going to be around assessing risk, right? For each type of service, they're going to be making a personal judgment about what they perceive to be the risk to them and their family. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. And not only what they perceive to be the risk, but what is permissible. There's essential, there's non-essential, but there's also acceptable and not acceptable. So while it might be acceptable to go to work, it's not acceptable to go visit the grandparents, let's say, where these lines have been completely blurred, and it's very, very messy. And what people don't do well with ambiguity. They don't do well with messiness. So they'll retreat to what feels safest. If they aren't sure that it's safe and they aren't sure that it's permissible, they'll stick with what they think is the safest and what they think is permissible. So, you know, the example that Dr. Murphy got with the patient that was ready to come in, she talked to her husband, things got messy. It became ambiguous. And so what did she do? She reverted back to what is safe in her mind, which is to not go out.
So Dr. Murphy, talk to us a little bit about how you see these things playing out in your practice, differences in consumers by segment.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I would say that it's caught a lot of us by surprise. A couple examples would be, you know, in what we would consider a high risk population, which is our elderly geriatric patients, and high risk meaning high risk for exposure to something like coronavirus, but also high risk in terms of what kind of bad things could be really happening to their eyes. So when you think about a patient calling with blurry vision, you know, the list of possible diagnoses for someone who's 80 is very different than for someone who's 25. Again, that older patient being more high risk. So, you know, getting on the phone with those folks and being willing to bring them in, like, Mr. Smith, we really should see you. And Mr. Smith will say one of two things. You know, we tell him to come in, make sure he's wearing a mask. We'll all be protected. Our staff will be safe. And, you know, one response might be, look, I've lived through the Depression. I've lived through World War II. I'm not afraid of any stinking virus. You know, and we'll come in here very brazenly, unmasked and just kind of ready to go. And that's always surprising. But the flip side also happens where you'll have, you know, Mr. Smith say, well, why aren't we doing this through telemedicine? You know, I see my internist that way and I see my PCP that way. Haven't you guys figured out a way to do that? And again, you tend to prejudge those patients thinking that they aren't going to be receptive to telemedicine, but a lot of them are ready to go with high resolution webcams and laptops and moving around the house while they're chatting with us. So I think it goes both ways there. But I think ultimately what it comes down to, like you guys talked about, is perception of safety and truly what the perceived need is. And I think that's where, as providers and staff, we can really be helpful in helping our patients make that determination. I think when you talk about, you know, a mom wanting to bring her children in, it may be that two of her children aren't current, you know, don't have any sort of current corrective eyewear, but she may have a child that's in CRT or myopia control who hasn't been seen for 6 months, in which case it's our job and our duty to help walk them through, you know, which child really does need to be seen right now and which one doesn't. And that's just another way for us to offer more personalized care in this environment. And I think it leads to that transparency that we talked about and having established relationships with these folks that allows us to really customize their care.
Yeah, thank you. I think for that, what's interesting about that, back to Stephanie's earlier comment about looking for experts, it sounds like doctors are going to be doing a lot of assessing and advising patients as they try to determine if they need to come in for care or if it could be delayed or there might be some other telemedicine or electronic option. Would you say that's true, Dr. Murphy?
I would definitely say that's true. And I think most of us in the industry are a little bit leery when it comes to telemedicine. I think in our particular field, we know that it doesn't allow us necessarily to provide the highest level of care. But at the same time, I think it does help us re-engage with the patient in terms of our relationship. So if it's simply getting on to have a face-to-face conversation with someone over video, you can kind of see their shoulders drop. They know you, they trust you. And you say, look, I've been reviewing your chart, or I'm looking at your eye right now. When you talked about a red eye, I thought it was going to be mildly pink, and I'm looking at you and it looks like steak, right? So some of those things we can pick up very quickly over telemedicine. If at that point they see your reaction and you think, boy, that really needs to be seen, I'd really like to see you in office, they have an elevated level of comfort in terms of the necessity to be seen. But in addition to that, that they know that their condition warrants it.
Right, right. Thank you for that. Okay, well, let's shift gears and talk a little bit about the patient mindset as they come to the doctor's office. Stephanie, I'd like you to put us in the shoes of a consumer who's coming into a doctor's office and would like to hear what your thoughts are about what that patient might be thinking as they walk in the door. What new processes or protocols will they be looking for at check-in or in the waiting room? Will they be judging office cleanliness? All of that kind of things. Talk to us a little bit about what they might be thinking as they come in the door.
The first thing they're going to be thinking is, why couldn't I do this online? And why isn't there an app for this? So they're going to be more and more accustomed to doing everything online. Including telemedicine. And we're already seeing the huge, in just 4 weeks, the huge shift. And that shift is going to continue. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But then, you know, after they get over why they can't do this online, hopefully it's been explained to them, as Dr. Murphy said, this is why we need to see you. They're sitting there thinking, I hope this is worth it. Every time I go out, I'm taking a risk. I'm now in a doctor's office. So what you're going to be looking to do is to add a sense of encouragement, a sense of confidence, and a sense of comfort. Things like they're going to expect contactless interactions, meaning no contact. I don't touch you. You don't give me a pen to use to sign my name. You don't touch me. I don't touch you. I don't touch things. So how, you know, don't take my credit card and hand it back to me. So they're going to be looking for ways to do cashless, touchless pay, that sort of thing. They're also going to be looking for signs of reassurance that they're safe in the waiting room. This is to be without said, you know, how many people are you allowing in your waiting room at a time and in your dispensary and in the halls? Chances are your halls might not be 6 feet wide. Your doors might not be 6 feet wide. How do you train staff to, you know, stay with a patient, but to stay 6 feet apart from them? Is it even reasonable? And if it's not, then to explain to the patient, listen, I'm going to be close to you. These are the precautions we take. This is why we think it's safe. I'm going to touch you. I'm going to whatever the case may be. So they're going to be thinking, is it worth it? And they're going to be looking for those trust and reassurance responses. They are going to be looking for transparency. How do they know that what you're saying, you're actually doing? I know that Dr. Murphy and I spoke earlier, and she had a great example of demonstrating cleanliness in the waiting room. I would love for her to talk about that. It was a great example.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Again, it comes as a shock, I think, to most of us who are in the industry where, you know, we've had these standards of universal precautions for a long time in terms of disinfecting after patients have been in an area, disinfecting an exam room. And so really, we're not doing a whole lot that's different. We may be disinfecting a little bit more frequently or letting the disinfection material sit there a little bit longer. But it's important to incorporate exactly what you talked about, Stephanie, and that is that level of comfort and transparency for the patient. So we've heard some suggestions from colleagues where, you know, they've got laminated sheets that they're laying on the chairs that say this space has been disinfected. And then it's a cue to the patient when they come into the room. They can pick it up and sit down there. They hand it to the doctor. The doctor then puts it down. That chair now doesn't have a sign on it. So then it's a cue to staff to go back and clean that particular chair. And then when the sign goes back on there after it's been done, it's a cue to the next patient, then they can sit there. Again, that stuff that's been done historically for a long time. We've always made it a point in our office of cleaning the instruments in front of the patients. So I think that's going to continue to take place. And like you mentioned, Stephanie, also just having the conversation with the patient. We're disinfecting this. We've got procedures in place where we're making sure that germs aren't being spread from patient to patient. Things we've been doing for a long time that just need a little extra TLC and a little explanation to the patient.
Great. Thank you. So it's always interesting to see what learnings we might have from other sectors of the economy within the broader healthcare industry. Stephanie, can you talk for a couple of minutes about things we might be able to discern from other elements of our society that might play out here in an optometric practice?
Yeah, certainly those with the greatest need will come first. I should say those with the greatest perceived need will come first. You know, you might think that those with the greatest medical need are actually not showing up, but those who have weighed the pros and the cons of going versus not going, and those who have said, I need to go. So in other areas of healthcare, we're expecting obviously the sickest to come first. However, the sickest are not always the most financially lucrative, especially in the hospital setting. Elective procedures, non-essential procedures, in and out same day procedures are the most profitable. So how do you schedule for the sickest but leave space for the financially lucrative if that's your situation as well? You're also going to see people with pent-up demand across all aspects of healthcare. So what do they do first? Teeth, eyes, dermatology? You know, we've not seen that before where they're having to choose. Maybe they don't feel like they have to choose, but if they're wanting to still reduce their exposure, they are going to be choosing. And they'll say, I'm going to choose this rash and go see the dermatologist maybe over going for just an annual eye exam because I think I can live with the way my eyes are right now. And then, of course, like I said earlier, everywhere, contactless retail experiences. So how can I shop without touching anything? And is it realistic? How do you make them feel good about the things that they do have to touch? And how can you help them touch less, especially in the interaction, like in that transaction, the paying part?
That's a great point. It'll be interesting to see how all this plays out in the coming weeks. Well, that's all for part one of this episode. Tune in next time for part two, where we'll continue our chat with Stephanie Oh and Dr. Murphy about the consumer mindset amid the COVID-19 pandemic.
This has been the Premier Academy 360 podcast, brought to you by VSP Global. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to check out podcasts.vspproviderhub.com for a comprehensive collection of business building training and education tailored to VSP network doctors and staff. This premier program benefit is currently available to all network practices. Visit podcasts.vspproviderhub.com to learn more.